You get out of the service after the war ends in the summer of 45. When did you get out?
I got out January of 46.
46. And you played some barnstorming in the winter?
No, I went from...
You said you played in Puerto Rico?
Puerto Rico that winter.
That winter.
Yeah.
And you came back?
I came back to go to spring training with the Newark Eagles in Jacksonville, Florida.
Okay. Take that. That team was going to win the Negro League Championship. Go around the end, you know, tell me the players, the pitchers, because that was a great team.
That 1946 Newark Eagle baseball team was one of the best teams I played on. It reminded me a lot of the 1948 Cleveland Indians baseball team. We had a fella playing third base named Pat Patterson, was similar to Ken Keltner. We had a shortstop, Monty Irving, who was as good as Boudreaux at that particular position at that time. And I played second base.
Wait a minute, let's go for history. We got to tell these people that Monty Irving played in the big leagues and had a big role with the Giants in 54 and was a terrific ball player in the major leagues.
You know, he and I might have been teammates because Mrs. Manley, Effie Manley, who was the businesswoman for the Newark Eagles, offered him Monty along with me.
So that's a good infield, that you playing second and him playing.
Yeah, it would have been great because we've been teammates in Newark and I would have had a teammate in Cleveland. And I think she wanted $20,000 for the two of us. And she wound up getting 15 for me, and he didn't take money. But you know, this may be off a little bit, but the $15,000, she got 10 when I signed. And if I made the major leagues, she got another 5, but I was supposed to get 2,500. And I never knew about her until he told me about it.
Who was your first baseman?
Who played first on that team? Who was the first baseman?
A fellow by the name of Lenny Pearson. Good first baseman and one of the best curveball hitters I've ever seen. We had a fellow by the name of Johnny Davis playing left field. He was a type of hitter. I would compare him to maybe Hank Bauer, that kind of a line drive hitter. Center field, we had a fellow by the name of Jimmy Wilkes, who was a lot like Henderson. And left field, we had a fellow by the name of Bob Harvey, big, strong fellow, like put him in a Charlie Keller type situation. Had a catcher named Ruffing, who defense-wise was a great defensive catcher. A little bit like Girardi, what's his name?
Girardi.
With the Cubs. And pitching, we had a fellow by the name of Leon Day, was as good as anybody that I've ever pitched against.
Now he's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, he was a Allie Reynolds type of fastball and a Vic Rashid type of curveball.
But he wasn't a big guy.
No.
I met him, he what, 5'10" maybe?
Yeah, very, very strong.
Threw very hard.
Very quick. And when we had a doubleheader, he pitched the first game, he played outfield the second game.
So he could hit.
He could hit. And we have another fellow by the name of Lewis, pitcher, that was with St. Paul for a while in the minor leagues. Another fellow by the name of Max Manning, a fellow by the name of Lynn Hooker. And those three guys were great pitchers. When you compare that team, like I said earlier, you compare that team to the 1948 Cleveland Indian team.
And Leon Day, when the breakthrough came, was too old for the major leagues, because he obviously would have made it if he were younger. Is that true? I mean, he.
Oh yeah. Oh, no question about it.
The reason he didn't get a chance is
no.
He was.
You know, when I said before about them not being bitter. Lenny Pearson, who was the first baseman for Newark Eagles, he had a tavern in Newark. And when the season was over, all the guys who had been involved in the major league part of baseball would come to that tavern, and a lot of the guys that were from the different ball clubs in Negro League would come to that tavern. We'd have a lot of fun talking about the game of baseball. The one guy in that whole group that might have felt a little different was, and I think he felt a little bit differently more after he got an opportunity to play in Minneapolis, was Ray Dandridge. because he thought that he should have got an opportunity, hitting 356 or something, led the league, and he never got the opportunity to play.
He didn't play on your team in Newark, did he?
No, he was in Mexico at the time I got there.
So you had at least two Hall of Famers, and you and Day. Monty Irvin was a terrific ball player.
Yeah. So well, we've had, I think, four guys from that Negro League team in the Hall of Fame. Monty, myself, Day, and a shortstop by the name of Willie Wells, who was my manager when I got there. Great player. And Dandridge, of course, another great player.
Yeah.
Well, in 1946, Jackie is already in the minor leagues. What was the mood around the Negro Leagues? Was there any sense that the Negro Leagues were going to come to an end, or was it still, hey, we're here, it's thriving? What was the sense that?
Claire, I don't think they ever thought about the Negro League wouldn't function for a long time. I think that when we got the opportunity, of course, the mostly younger the people that were involved in the game of baseball. Now Jack and Monty was a little bit older than Campion, Nuke, and myself.
How old were you in 46?
I was 22. Yeah, 22.
And had you not gone, you were going to go to college then in the fall of 1946 at Long Island University, and you did go.
Yeah.
In the fall.
One semester. Yeah.
And then when that semester was over, that was when you were.
When I was in just drafting the service. In 46.
No, you were out of the service.
Oh, out of the service in 46 when I went to Puerto Rico.
No, after the first semester in Long Island University, where did you go then?
In 42, my first.
In 46.
Oh, in 46? No, I was. Well, see, I was in the service in the winter of 42. I had played that summer with the Newark Eagles, and I went a semester to Long Island University, and then I got drafted in the service, and I came out of service in 46.
Oh, I
so
see.
You didn't go back to college after
No,
the service.
Didn't go back at all.
Okay.
When 46, when I got out of the service, I went right to Puerto Rico and played winter ball. And, of course, in August 10th of 1946, I got another letter from that lady that, either marry me now or forget it. So
after this 46 season, when you won the championship, what did you do that winter?
Worked in the post office. Worked in the post office in Paterson, New Jersey. And then...
Nobody talked to you about playing minor league baseball then. I mean, there was
no
major league.
Well, where Cleveland Farm Club was, it wasn't. They weren't the AAA club where Vec wanted to send me. They didn't allow integrators, baseball wise or people wise. So what happened was, the Philadelphia Athletics had a AAA club in Toronto. And he had worked agreement with Mr. Connie Mack for me to go to Toronto in 48. Took me to spring training in 48, changed my position from second base to the outfield, and I had a good spring, and I made the club.
Larry, can you backtrack a little bit? Because what we haven't discussed is how you get involved with the major league team. Can you describe the transition from the Negro Leagues to the minor league system of the Indians? What
and
happened?
And also, 1947. We got to cover a year because we're finished 46, and you work in the post office in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's 47. What happens in the spring of 47?
Spring of 47? I went to spring training with the Newark Eagles in April of 47, and
still in the Negro Leagues.
Negro Leagues.
And nobody had talked to you about playing.
Nobody had talked to me about playing baseball. The first time I heard about anybody talking to me about Major League Baseball was like in May of 47. There was a gentleman by the name of Lou Jones, who was a perfect relation man for Bill Vec, who came to my house in Paterson and went to a game with me in Trenton, New Jersey. We were playing the Baltimore Eli Giants, and coming back with him from Trenton, He mentioned the fact that I'd been scouted by a fellow by the name of Bill Killifer, who was the head scout of the Indians. And the question he asked me, do you think you can play Major League Baseball? And, you know, you're thinking that you can play baseball. Yeah, I can play baseball, you know. And don't, you know, the emphasis as far as Major League Baseball was concerned didn't concern me. I think the question he asked me was a question to a point comparing the Negro Leagues with the Major Leagues.
So it seemed like a silly question at the time?
Yeah, I thought so. So I said, hey, I can play baseball, okay? So he said, well, he said, I'll be back in about a month. So he came back the first part of June. The Yankees, Cleveland was playing the Yankees. And he took me to the game. That's the second game I ever saw. I worked in the playgrounds in the summer when I was in high school. So they had such thing as a knothole league at that time. So I would take a bunch of the kids over to see the game. So that's the first game I saw. The second game was when he came back from Cleveland and took me to Yankee Stadium to see the Yankees in Cleveland. And the pitcher was Embry and Speck Shea. I'll never forget.
Red Embry and Speck Shea. 47, well, Shea had a great year that year.
Yeah. And we're sitting there, we're talking, so and so and so. He says, is there any difference in that baseball? I said, I don't see any difference, you know. So anyway, he brought me back to my house. And he said, the next time I come, I'm going to be taking you to Cleveland. So I said, yeah, okay. And so then I went on this and kept playing with Newark. So July 4th, we had a doubleheader against the Philadelphia Stars. And he came that morning and he said, we're gonna take the train back to Chicago after the game is over. So I played the first game. Matter of fact, hit a home run and my teammates gave me a kit, you know, going away. And he got on the train, I think, like 6 o'clock in the afternoon in Newark, got in Chicago the next morning. Bill was in the hotel in his office. And I went in the, and Lou Jones took me to him to sign a contract. And when I walk in, I've always taught to say Mr. So I said, Mr. Vec. So he said, you call me Bill and I call you Lawrence, right? So nobody called me Lawrence, but any time I was any place, particularly in the ballpark, and I hear somebody say Lawrence, I know who it was, right? And so, I went in the office and assigned the contract, and then that's when he, had the notebook, and that's when he said to me, we're in this together, and that's when he said to me, this is a history type thing going on, and, the things that you can't do, you know, if you do, then they might change the whole picture as far as integrating baseball is concerned, Afro-American. And, Clara and Faye, that certain people you can look at and look them in the eye and talk to them and know the sincerity of the person or know the game player or know the politician. It's part of your life because you grew up that way.
So tell me the day. This is July 5th again?
July 5th.
So it's a day after a very significant day.
Yeah.
So.
And they were playing the White Sox at Comiskey Park.
Let's go through this slowly because this is a very important day in American history. You had never met Vec before, is that right? And this fellow takes you to Chicago and you walk in a room and he says, I want you to sign a big league contract. Well, now, that's an emotional moment. Tell me how you felt, and tell me what that was like.
Number one, it's a kind of a feeling that you can't believe it. You really can't believe it. I mean, you've signed the contract. You know you're going to play Major League Baseball, but you really can't believe it. The time that I really believed it is when I put the uniform on. And my first time at bat, and I pinch hit. And then the second time when I played the game, the second game, then I know I'm in the major leagues. Never thinking that I'm not going to be able to make it. I that never crossed my mind. People say, well, you ever had any doubts? I never had any doubts.
But at what point, if the scout is asking you through these various meetings, you know, what do you think of baseball? It's baseball, I can play baseball. But at what point do you put together, hey, I might go where Jackie went and no one else has gone. I might be the second African-American in the first one in the American League. When did that hit you?
A long time after. I think maybe 2-3 years when the question kept coming up, you know.
So there wasn't a sense of history being made. You were just following
not in the, not in the
at
beginning.
That point.
No? Not in the beginning.
But I'll bet you there were things you were thinking about. Weren't you worried about how my teammate's going to react? Is he going to stand behind me? What am I in for? That conversation took place because he concerned
about the teammates, because in the beginning, when Boudreau took me into the clubhouse, he had all the players lined up.
Now, what day was that?
The 5th, July 5th in the morning.
So you sign in the morning?
About 11 o'clock in the morning.
The minute you signed, he took you to the...
I signed the contract in Vec's office, Lou Jones, who was a perfect relation man, matter of fact, was Lena Horne's first husband. He brought me to Boudreau. And then Boudreau had the players lined up.
So you were going right on the roster. No minor league.
No minor leagues.
And you knew you were going to play.
I thought I was going to play the first, you know, that in 1947, the first year, because I had left Newark hitting about 400. But when I got to Cleveland, the first game, I said before, Boudreau had me, I pinch hit it, and I struck out. The second game, I played first base, and I got a double and drove in a run. Now, that's the only full game I played in 1947. The rest of it was pinch hitting here and there. And people say you didn't have too good a year. You know, one of the difficult things about that is I had never done that before. I was used to being up 4 times, getting 4 whacks at it. And then to put into a pinch hitting role.
You didn't know the pitchers?
Didn't know the pitchers, but even if you didn't know the pitchers, you still know you got 4 chances. And if you got 1 chance, it's a little bit more difficult, you know, because when you go up to pinch it and you fail, it lingers on your mind longer than if you go 0-for-4, because you know you're going to get a chance to.
Can I ask a timeout here for a minute? Can we go back now? Because I don't want to lose it. Ready, guys? Larry, that's a big day in the history of, really, in American history, that July 5th, 1947. Talk to me about that meeting in Beck's office. Tell me what it was like, what he said to you, but more importantly, almost what your reaction was, because you knew some of those guys were going to be Southerners. He told you what you couldn't do, what you had to take. What was that like, and what was he like?
I think the most important part of that meeting was when he said to me that we're in this together. And as I said to you earlier, you can look in a person's eye and tell a lot about the sincerity. Although I didn't know him until I got in baseball. But he was the kind of a person, after I got in baseball, I learned that was a person that believed in human beings and sort of rooted for the underdog. And if you say underdog at that particular time, I think most Afro-Americans was considered underdogs. So when he made that statement to me, I relaxed. It made me relax a lot. The other thing that made me relax during those years was that he could sense when I needed someone to talk to, because I could be in Chicago and I could have a pretty good day, but from him knowing me, he would give me a ring and he'd say, look, I'll be in Chicago tomorrow. And he was a great jazz lover. He loved jazz. So he'd come into Chicago and we'd go to see Count Basie or George Shearing or one of those kind of guys, you know. And that, you know, when they say music shrews the savage beast, that's the true fact. Because you would sit there with him and you listen to the music and you relax. and you felt good, you know. And then the next day you go out and all those so-called obstacles or negatives, you kind of got away from it, you know. You know, you can't say that you could forget negative things when they're constantly in front of you. Like when Commissioner Faye said to me that the teammates, you know, it's tough to walk into a clubhouse and be ignored by, you know, by your teammates. Because that, you know, when we talk about athletics and you look at the athletic world, that doesn't happen too often. Now,
nothing
of course, back Bill there.
Beck could say to you, could prepare you for that.
No,
moment.
No.
But let's go back to what he did say. You're in the office and he says, now, Larry, we're in this together. What did he say? What did he tell you about what was going to happen and what you couldn't do? And what did he say?
When he said that we're in this together, then he went into the fact that this is a historical thing, which I had not thought too much about. The other thing is that you're going to have a lot of people that are not going to agree with what we're doing. If the umpire should happen to call a pitch that you think maybe a ball or a strike, you can't turn around and question it. If someone slides into second base, if you slide into second base and someone happened to rough you up a little bit, you gotta get up and walk away.
Did he mention the fans or people yelling?
Fans are gonna yell, which they did. The one thing that bothered me a little bit, and I had not been too much accustomed to it, of course I had never signed that many autographs, but being in high school and even in college, you mingle with all people, all kinds of people, female and male. And he said that if some female Caucasian comes up to you on an autograph, looks like she's, you know, certain ages, 16, 17, 18 year old, make sure that, you know, you don't sign, maybe you have to not sign it because someone might think you're trying to get a telephone number, trying to give a telephone number, that kind of
so
situation.
The old taboo was
yeah. He said if it's some young kid like 9, 10 years old, that's the problem, but you got to be careful when you think. Now, that was a little hard to do because I'm not that good on telling age, you know. And I probably signed autographs for people who were older than 9, 10, 11 years old, you know. So I said to him one day, I said, you know, it's a little hard for me to judge the age problem, he said. But he says, well, for the first few years, you know, let's do it this way.
But back to that meeting, what was your reaction? I mean, had you gone into that meeting thinking that some of this was going to happen, or did this come as a bit of a surprise that he was laying out for you a bunch of rules? Obviously, in the Negro League, you didn't have to worry about that.
I didn't go into the meeting think that I would have to be going through certain things that he talked about. I had not had much talk with Jack at that time because, you know, like he was there in April of 47, and I hadn't seen too much of him in the minor leagues. I saw him play a couple of times in Newark. So I hadn't had a chance to talk to him about the situation. So you kind of go in there blindfolded, you know, until Vec mentioned certain things you did. And then
But they made sense to you, didn't they? I mean, obviously, he was giving you good advice, I take it.
Oh, no question. Like I said, I can't think of too many other people that I could have worked with as closely as I worked with him and believe in him. And a lot of the things that he told me happened, and that made me more aware of.
If you didn't think he was in it with you, the do's and don'ts would have been harder.
I think
it would
have been more difficult.
People 30 years from now, Larry, won't realize in that Cleveland organization, there wasn't a single black person. That is, there was no trainer, nobody who worked in the office, nobody in the ballpark, no coaches. No one else was black in that entire operation but you. Is that right?
Yeah. But you see, one of the things that helped me along that line is that has been my whole history
right.
of being involved. Well, now, I can't say it in college because when I was in college, there was another African-American kid on the basketball team. But most of my life, as far as athletics was concerned, that's what it was all about, me and that's it.
But my point is he couldn't say to you there's going to be a coach, there's going to be a guy,
no.
40 or 50, he's going to be around to help you. No. Nobody.
The one guy that's supposed to have helped me or supposed to travel with me was his perfect relation man, the fellow by the name of Lou Jones. But Lou Jones, I never saw Lou Jones. I had my room and he had his.
Did he tell you there were some guys on the ball club, some of the coaches, or did he give you anybody that he thought you could go to on the road and be helpful? One of the coaches, McKechnie, or
there was one person on the ball club he mentioned to me that I could go to. That fellow by the name of Bill McKechnie, who was the coach at the time, who was very instrumental in the change that that came about from second base to the outfield. The other person that automatically came up and welcomed me was a fellow by the name of Jim Hegan. And the other fellow by the name of my good friend just passed away, Bob Lemon. Those three people were very, and Joe Gordon, those four people were very kind to me. Very cool. But Bill mentioned Bill McKechnie. And McKechnie was like, Bujo was a player, McKechnie was like the coach on the bench. And he, you know, he was the kind of a person that, I knew his son. His son ran the concession at Trenton Ballpark, where we played a lot. But I didn't know at the time that I was his son. So when I got to Cleveland, he was telling me that that was his son. And he sort of, you know, matter of fact, on the train, I'd go into his department and we'd sit there and we'd talk. And he'd tell me certain things that happened that you got to overlook. I never forget one day we're playing the Philadelphia Athletics and a fly ball comes out and I misjudge it, right? And we lost the game. And of course, when I came into clubhouse, nobody's going to come around me. So he came in with me and he only said three words, I think it was. He said, he called me Dobe. He said, Dobe? I said, yeah. He said, we'll find out what kind of ball player you are tomorrow. And I just, you know, I didn't really know what he was saying. But, you know, it's another thing where you believe in the supreme being because the next day I hit a home run to win the ball game. So then he comes to me and he says, that's what I'm talking about.
But back to the meeting with Vec, that ends, he's given you this